This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk. Hello, and welcome to the second of two episodes of Market Talk for the month of June. In this programme, we'll be talking elections, namely of the Mexican and French variety. We'll be talking tech volatility, namely Nvidia, and we'll be looking at a raft of inflation data and chatting through potential implications for rate cutting. So, hosting the call from a sunny UK is me, Frances Watson, and refreshed and raring to go from a short break, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, I was in the UK last week, and I think I brought the sunny weather with me. I think it's all changed, isn't it?
Well, thanks very much for bringing the sunshine to the UK, Ben. We'll hold you responsible. But of course, what you're not responsible for is this politically induced volatility that we've seen on the back of, you know, several elections. I'm thinking Mexico, India, EU elections, and then the subsequent, you know, Macron calling the snap election. I mean, do you think these are idiosyncratic events, or do you think this election nervousness, if you like, will broaden out to the wider markets?
I think it's telling us a few different things. I think, as you said, we've had some market volatility in the hours, days, weeks after some of these results. I think first thing it's telling us, it's very hard to trade, to have the correct risk premium in markets for quite bifurcated outcomes. I mean, it's impossible to hedge or predict what's happening in a lot of these elections. I'd also say that because market volatility is pretty low generally, apart from these elections, and you know, market valuations are quite elevated, the impact, if investors see the outcome as more worrisome, can be quite large. And then the third thing I'd say, instead of trying to get ahead of these outcomes, because you know we've seen polls being incredibly wrong, haven't we? So it's not even as if we can try and trade off polls. Instead of trying to get ahead of the outcome, maybe you can think about trading after and trying to think about potentially if the market reaction is too big, trying to go to the other side. And we've seen that, for example, with the Mexican peso, which really weakened after the results in the Mexico election. And that was potentially an opportunity to buy some peso to go the other side of that. Things seem to have settled down a bit since as well. In some of the portfolios, we've had an underweight France position on the sovereign government bond side. And after some quite aggressive widening immediately after those snap elections were called, that again was an opportunity potentially to close some of that underweight. So yeah, I'd say prepare, don't predict, but get ready to have a look at these big market reactions and potentially take advantage.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing we saw last week, Ben, was a dovish tone from the Bank of England. I mean, inflation coming back to target and an August rate cut on the cards, it seems.
Yeah, we've had a load of different central banks. I don't know what to call the collective term for central banks, but we'll call it a load of central banks. The Bank of England was another one that came out, wasn't it, just recently. And as you say, I think surprised people by how they were, the decision was to keep interest rates unchanged, but a few of them, they said that some of the voters, it was a fine balance between unchanged and cutting. So I think they were trying to signal that you may expect in the August meeting that they will cut interest rates. And it's not just the Bank of England that's cutting interest rates. We've seen quite a few, haven't we? We've had the European Central Bank cut. We've seen Canada cut, Sweden, the Swiss National Bank as well. They've cut twice, I think. So yeah, we've had quite a few cuts, but the key one is, of course, the US Federal Reserve. The next meeting is in July. I think that's the end of July. That's still looking unlikely that they will cut. Investors and market pricing is looking at the meeting in the middle of September as the most likely first Fed rate cut. As you said, the data recently has signaled that. We've had sort of soft landing data. Some of the retail sales, industrial production have been a little bit weaker. And at the same time, inflation's coming down to some degree, which probably will allow that. But there's still a while to go, isn't it, until the 18th of September. So we'll see. And it really is important what the Federal Reserve does, not just because they're the largest economy in the world, but the US dollar is still too strong for comfort. We need to see the Federal Reserve cut interest rates. If they cut, that probably will lead to a weaker dollar because there'll be less money flowing into the US after those high interest rates, if interest rates get cut. And then that will allow a lot of other countries that really are worried about the dollar strength impacting their currencies. So a lot of emerging markets have got weak currencies. Japan is another great example on the developed side. They've got a very weak currency right now. If the dollar weakens a bit, that will allow those currencies to strengthen a bit, and that will just take some of the pressure off all those other central banks, maybe allow some of those emerging market central banks to also cut interest rates, which will be positive for emerging market growth potentially.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, let's go from US dollar then to US companies. And I can't really go on much more without mentioning what has sort of dominated financial headlines for the last couple of weeks, and that's Nvidia and the volatility in Nvidia. I was just listening at a meeting yesterday, Ben, and I heard some interesting stats, which I think the listeners will be interesting too. Market cap of Nvidia was $1 trillion as at the end of May 2023. It was $2 trillion a year later at the end of February 2024. And at the beginning of June this year, the market cap had soared to $3 trillion. The dominance in the S&P, I think, is around 30% plus. I don't know whether that's still the case given the fall recently. But isn't that a classic example of concentration risk?
Yeah, I mean, the impact on the S&P, I think the sort of 30% will be the impact on the growth of the S&P. Because as you say, Nvidia has grown so much. It's still, it's not quite 30% of the index yet, but you know, it's getting there. Maybe this time next year. But it's actually one of, Nvidia has been very volatile, but it's one of the $3 trillion gang, I suppose, you know, the Magnificent Seven. Three of them are now, well, as the time of speaking, because as you say, it's been quite volatile. Three of them are more than $3 trillion in size: Apple, Nvidia, Microsoft. So it's not just Nvidia. There's a lot of big companies. Yeah, the question is, are we looking at exuberance, which I suppose is a sort of nice way of saying a bubble? And you know, a lot of people are turning back the pages to actually when I started my career back in the late 90s and looking at the dot-com bubble. And whether or not, you know, we are in the middle of something that will eventually pop. I'd say in 2000, the dot-com bubble, it wasn't just the S&P 500, or at least the NASDAQ at the time, right? It wasn't just that was looking extremely expensive from a PE ratio. There were several others, weren't there? There was in Germany, Korea, Japan. They all had their own sort of growth markets, which all spectacularly blew up. This time around, does feel as though it's a little bit more concentrated on these Magnificent Seven, the technology sector in the US. Although there's also very dominant names elsewhere. So there's also TSMC in Taiwan, which is a huge part of the emerging markets index. In Europe, we know Novo Nordisk, we go ASML are massive parts of those indices. So it doesn't feel as though it's a bubble from an index basis. It's just that there's a huge concentration. And that in itself is a risk. I mean, I'm not saying that it's expensive. These names could continue to grow. But when it's just individual names, which are the size of sectors, which are the size of asset classes in the case of those $3 trillion names, then you do get a little bit worried. And Nvidia just recently has been going up and down by a few percent every day. So it does feel as though there's a lot of speculation potentially starting to creep into it. So I would say it probably is a bubble, but it probably will get a bit bigger before it pops. And trying to predict when it pops is impossible.
Good luck on that one. Look, let's go to current thinking and try and sober ourselves up. So just give us an update on your positioning. Having talked about one US equity, or maybe seven, what is our outlook then for four equities? I mean, what's our positioning there?
So in general, risk assets, so we include credit and equities there, we are a little bit underway. We are a little bit cautious on risk assets. And that's mainly because we think a lot of good news is priced into markets. It's almost markets where they are currently valued are priced for this perfect soft landing, the Goldilocks scenario that is happening, to be fair, but it's fully priced in, I guess, would be the risk. And if there was anything to upset it, then that could lead to downside in markets. So that's why we're a little bit underweight. But We are underweight mostly in the credit side just because we think there's less upside risk in credit, and there's still a bit of upside risk in S&P 500 in broad equity markets. Like I said, in some of those technology stocks, it doesn't feel as though we're at the peak of a bubble yet. It could go even higher than where it is today. So yeah, credit is the place that we're a little bit underweight. And frankly, that has worked out so far in June. So we're taping this on the 26th. So prices up to the 25th of June. The S&P 500 is still up sort of 3.5% in June. So it's done okay. And like I said, some of that is the Magnificent Seven, of course. Credit spreads, though, have started to widen a little bit, sort of 10 basis points or so widen credit spreads. So it's starting to a little bit of a wobble there.
And has that been led by the French names?
In Europe, it has, but yeah. It's actually credit spreads have widened more broadly. So French names, yes. So some of the banks, some of the utility companies have been a little bit weaker. But maybe there's also something a bit more broader about government bond yields having come off a little, having fallen a little bit. That's been the case. I mentioned that we've had some weakness in retail sales in the US and industrial production. So that's put the Fed rate cut in September back on the table. So we have seen slightly lower government bond yields, about 25 basis points, actually, for 10-year treasuries over the course of June up until the 25th of June. So that's about a quarter of a percent lower. So maybe that's putting off some of those yield-hungry buyers that were supporting credit markets. So maybe that's part of it. We've also had a lot of supply of credit, which up until this point has been digested. But again, you know, there could be indigestion. And the final point, I think, is what you're saying, some of this geopolitical risk, the politics, the French names, that sort of stuff, just weighing a little bit.
Okay, well, look, let's turn to the remainder of the week and what's on the financial horizon. Interestingly, we've got the first US election head-to-head debate, I think, this Thursday, Trump versus Biden. And the focus of attention, so I'm reliably told, will be on the fiscal deficit. Now, that doesn't seem to have moved markets yet. No impact at all from that ballooning deficit. When will it have an impact, Ben?
Yeah, actually, I posted something on LinkedIn today. So if anyone wants to check that out, have a look. And my point about the deficits, which I think is really interesting. I do worry about deficits, and it's not just the US. It's deficits, ballooning deficits all over the world, it seems, at the minute. It's not that I worry that, you know, the US government's not going to be able to afford to pay the deficit. It's going to go bust. It's going to, they'll have to cut spending on, defense or whatever it might be. What I think about, if you just forget about money, full stop, and you just think about the government running a deficit is a bit like the government dominating the choices about economic activity. It's deciding how many people work in the army, the size of the healthcare system, how much you should be taxed, how many people should receive benefit and don't have to work. It's making all these big decisions and as a result, running a deficit. Now, that's totally fine as long as they make them in a very productive and efficient way. But when I see increases like year on year of debt as a percentage of GDP, I think that those decisions may not be quite as productive as they could be, because in effect, the bang for your buck, the GDP for your deficit, it is going down. So it's something that I worry about from a productive point of view. Now, if this continues, then your country becomes less productive and potentially other countries that are doing it better become more productive. And you'll see that in terms of maybe a weakness in your currency. So you will be able to afford less things bought from abroad. So that does impact your purchasing power. And you might also see it in terms of higher inflation, which erodes your savings. So it is a bad thing, I think, structurally going forward to make these unproductive decisions and to see your deficit increasing, even if it doesn't lead to whatever countries just suddenly not being able to afford their interest payments. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, we're not talking about the good old Keynesian crowding out effect, are we? I mean, public versus private.
Yeah, I mean, again, the public versus private sector discussion is, you know, it's too broad for these podcast, unfortunately. And look, and the size of the public sector can increase as you become more developed, etc. I'm just saying that if it is unproductive, whatever it is, and the private sector can be unproductive, the public sector be unproductive.
Yeah.
And if I see debt increasing all the time as a percentage of GDP, I worry that that productivity is being impacted.
Yeah, no, good point. Good point. Another thing to worry about, potentially, we've got US PCE inflation figures on Friday. That's a sort of stable of inflation figures heading our way. We've got flash inflation figures from France, Spain and Italy, CPI. We've got inflation figures from Tokyo. I mean, I suppose, you know, we're just trying to get the hints of which way global rates will go. I suppose that's the conclusion we're looking at, isn't it?
Yeah. Core PCE is the most important. That's the US one, of course. So that's the key. But yes, Europe is, of course, maybe second most important in that. So that's, we're going to get those flash ones at the end of this week and the beginning of next week as well. Japan, as you say. So yeah, all eyes on that. Interestingly, today on the 26th this morning, we got some Australian inflation, not a huge economy, but inflation was a lot higher than expected. Just again, to show you, it's very, very hard to predict inflation. And it's particularly given that we've had a couple of decades of very subdued inflation. We're just not used to predicting inflation. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got a surprise, if that's a way of saying it, for at least some of these. So I suspect we're not on this perfect soft landing. And again, one reason just to be a little bit cautious with some of your risk positioning.
Yeah, no, good point. And of course, Friday shaping up to be a busy day because, of course, the Indian government bonds will be added to JP Morgan's GBIEM Global Diversified Index. I mean, that's been something that we've known about for a while, right?
Yeah, this is, just to be clear, that index. So this is the local currency emerging market bond index, and it's a huge one, and it's going in other local currency. So this is non-dollars, is local currency emerging market sovereign bond indices. So yeah, it starts to go in the JP Morgan one at the end of this month. It's actually going in over the course of 10 months, so in sort of 1% slugs. By the end of the 10 months it will be 10% of the index, and this is pretty big because these are big indices. It's been the process for a while. I mentioned before, for something that I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at the strength of the dollar. If the Federal Reserve can cut interest rates, if the dollar can weaken, a lot of these emerging market currencies start to look an awful lot more attractive. And of course, you do tend to get higher yields in a lot of these emerging markets as well. So, you know, India has been a structural positive story anyway. So I'm talking more broadly across local markets currencies, but that's definitely one to watch. And, you know, it's a positive structural direction across a lot of emerging markets there potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. So one to watch there, and one to watch for what you're about to tell us, because I'm going to ask you, what's your number for this week, Ben, and why have you chosen it?
I was very tempted to say 20 for the T20 semi-final, which is coming up tomorrow. But I think by the cricket, yeah, cricket. But it's,
cricket,
England are playing India. But I suspect by the time people listen to this, they'll already know the result. And I'm worried that England will be out of the competition by then. But we'll see. But actually, the real number that I'll do is 85, because that's the price of Brent crude right now. So oil has been fluctuating all over the place. Had been coming down a bit. This is, I'd say, generally for inflation, for, of course, oil consumers, you want to have cheaper oil, allows you to buy more things, retail sales, all that sort of stuff. So lower oil had been a little bit more positive earlier this year, but it's just starting to creep up again. $85, again, that's pretty high. It's gone up 5% again in June. I mean, we've spoken about politics in terms of elections and stuff, but of course, geopolitics, and in terms of, you know, war zones, etc., plays a part, a big part in the price of oil. And that's still something to be concerned about, I think, isn't it? Of course. And again, maybe another reason just to dab the brakes in terms of risk allocation here.
We've talked a lot about elections in this podcast, which is just the way it is at the moment, isn't it? We knew it would be a big year. And of course, a big moment for us here in the UK, because of course, we go to the polls to elect whichever party we fancy on next Thursday. And just to add to that we will be hosting a live election webinar on Friday, the 5th of July, which, if you can't make that, you can't register for that for whatever reason, will be repeated here on the pod on LGIM Talks on Friday, the 5th of July. But for now, Ben, thanks so much for your thoughts, and thank you all for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.